Hello and welcome to today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, April the 25th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here's our first story from the Globe Gazette. It's entitled Victorino's Italian Cafe Now Open. New dining option opens in former Pies and More spot at Willowbrook Mall. This is written by Robin McClelland of the Globe Gazette. North Iowa residents have another delicious option for breakfast, lunch, and dinner in Mason City. Victorino's Italian Cafe has opened in the former Pies and More location at Willowbrook Mall. Victorino's serves breakfast and lunch each day from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., when the menu changes over to Italian specialty pastas and entrees. It's another in a long line of businesses opened by Louis Victorino and his family. He got his start in Mason City operating the Mr. Taco food truck. Eventually, he opened a brick-and-mortar Mr. Taco in Southbridge Mall. He followed that up with a short-lived torta and dessert restaurant also in Southbridge's food court. He owns the Happy Donkey on Federal Plaza and Lulu's Lounge on South Federal Avenue. Both restaurants serve Mexican favorites and specialty drinks. "This is fun, trying something new," said Victorino. "I have been working in Mason City and Northwood since I came here to Iowa, and now I am making breakfast, which I haven't done before. I worked for a few weeks with a friend in his restaurant to learn about making breakfast, and now I am ready to serve it to all of you." Victorino's daughter, Dolly Cancino, is no stranger to working with family. During the summer months, she runs the Sweet Rescue ice cream truck seen cruising Mason City neighborhoods. On Wednesday morning, she was taking orders and delivering pancakes and eggs to diners. Kayla and Maria Evans stopped in for breakfast on the restaurant's first day. The Evanses are friends with Sarah Yezik, another server at Victorino's. "Sarah made a post on Facebook and we decided to try it out," Maria Evans said. They brought along Winter 2 and August, not quite 1 year old. Kayla Evans was enjoying eggs Benedict, while Maria had pancake with teddy bear ears. Prices for breakfast and lunch run from $4 to $12. The affordable options are classic American fare like eggs and toast or a breakfast burger. Salads, sandwiches, and appetizers round out the lunch menu. Dinner service features dishes with seafood and chicken and baked pasta. Classic fare such as spaghetti with meatballs and chicken Alfredo is priced around $12, and the most expensive meal on the menu clocks in at just $19.95. The cozy 11-table restaurant offers a limited bar with beer, wine, and a few mixed drinks. The north dining area offers a space for gatherings of up to 16 people. Victorino's Italian Cafe is open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. The cafe is located at 1631 4th Street Southwest in Willowbrook Mall. Next is an article entitled 10 Years of Growing Locally. Twisted River Farms Evolution Continues with On-Site Store Shopping. Written by Jacob Schaefer of the Globe Gazette. Twisted River Farm in Mitchell is celebrating 10 years of growing high-quality local produce in North Iowa this month. The celebration includes the birth of the farm's newest endeavor, an on-farm store open to the public. The farm store is located on owners Steve and Marcy Strasheim's property and stocked with the season's first offerings such as salad greens, starter plants, flowers, and products from other local farms. And as the growing season continues, more items will be on the shelves. The grand opening is from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday, with regular store hours from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursdays and Fridays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturdays. Steve Strasheim said more than 2 years of planning preceded his first season in 2014. They started raising chickens before transitioning to only produce a few years later. Throughout that time, Strasheim said he's been engrossed with research, continually learning from sources like books, YouTube, and the people around him. "Looking back on it, it's just laughable to even think that I could have started a farm," Strasheim said, "but that didn't even cross my mind. I was just going to do it." Twisted River Farm began on a small patch of grass with those chickens, then moved to a friend's field in Nora Springs where the Strasheims were at the time. That small garden plot transformed into a full-fledged half-acre farm in Mitchell in 2018. By 2020, Twisted River Farm microgreens, salad greens, and culinary herbs could be found in select local grocers, farmers markets, and available for home delivery. Evolution has been constant at Twisted River Farm as the couple expanded to produce. He left his day job and they moved to Mitchell. The store will allow them to market products directly from the source to customers. Another constant, Strosheim said, is creativity. With space restrictions, it has always been considered an urban-style farm. Getting creative with layout, planning, and products has allowed the farm to thrive. We're utilizing underused, essentially cheap land, so we do not have to compete for land with commodity farmers, Strosheim said. We've really fell into an amazing situation with the neighbors that we have. In Mitchell, the operation is centered on the Strosheim's land, but neighbors graciously offered space to allow it to grow, including two tunnel greenhouses on property across the street. It does take time to develop those relationships, Strosheim said, but they all think it's great. They love the story, they like getting produce, and they like being a part of it. The farm transitioned to a community-supported agriculture model in 2021, bringing freshly grown produce directly to customers' doorsteps around North Iowa. In 2022, Marcy added flowers to Twisted River Farm's catalog of more than 40 vegetable and greens offerings, selling bouquets at the Mason City and Clear Lake farmers' markets and as a bi-monthly home delivery subscription. The farmer's inception coincided with a growing passion for locally sourced food, with consumers wanting to see where their food comes from. On-farm stores have really been a growing movement, Strosheim said, and part of my enjoyment is showing people what's possible. The COVID-19 pandemic and new technologies making farm stores easier to operate contributed to the growth of the local food economy. When I started discovering local food, I was just more fascinated by the production of it and the economy around it, Strosheim said. And I started learning about the vast local food system in the county, in the country, excuse me, and how it's kind of overlooked. The store's grand opening Friday brings along with it some anxiety about purchasing inventory and hoping customers show up, but he's been encouraged and supported by his friends and family. When the farm converted to produce only in 2017, Strosheim said the first year's harvest was beginner's luck, but enough to keep going, keep improving, and keep learning. It's a good nervous I'm feeling. We have one chance to make a good first impression, and I'm excited for that, Strosheim said. And at the end of the day, I'm just really proud to be able to bring something like this to Mitchell County. And in our final story from the front page of the Mason City Globe Gazette today, Nora Springs Farm stages grand opening. Skyview Market to sell locally grown beef, eggs, honey, and bakery items. This is also written by Jacob Schaefer of the Globe Gazette. A North Iowa beef farm is hosting the grand opening of its on-farm store this weekend, creating a space in which a variety of local products are sold. Skyview Market, owned by Laura and Aaron Cunningham of Nora Springs, is more than just an extension of Skyview Farm's beef sales. It's a hub for locally produced products like eggs, honey, and bakery items. The grand opening, which will feature guests, vendors, will be held 9 to 5 p.m. Friday, April 26th, and Saturday, April 27th, at the farm, 3 miles north of Nora Springs on Balsam Avenue. The barn on the Cunninghams' property, which has been transitioned into the market space, was built in the early 1900s. Shelves inside are stocked with Skyview's beef, honey from Rudd, maple syrup from Marble Rock, and many more locally produced products. It's hyper-local. The farthest away something is coming from is Clarksville, Laura Cunningham said. We have all the food groups covered, and it's just really cool to be able to bring some awareness to things that are right here. Cunningham said the idea for the market first came to the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic after receiving many calls from people looking for larger quantities of beef during lockdown. Fast forward a few years and the Department of Agriculture started the Choose Iowa program. So we applied for funds to create a food hub, to create an aggregation point, Cunningham said. We had experience marketing and all the freezer licenses for all that. Sometimes when you're a smaller farmer, it's hard to justify that expense, so a food hub just aggregates us all together and does some sharing that way. Skyview Farms has had a delivery route for its beef for a few years, and customers have visited the farm, but Cunningham said they've never had a great space to welcome customers, interact with them, and share farm experience with people buying their products. We weren't able to do farmers markets, but I'm really just excited to have this space, Cunningham said. It's just really a way to welcome people into our farm and our family without having to take away from family time, which is really important to us. The open house this weekend is going to kick off our store, Cunningham said. Then we'll have a couple of days a week where you can order online and pick up on the farm. And about once a month, we're going to have Fresh Market Saturdays. Fresh Market Saturdays will be open to the public and see the market filled with guest vendors, Cunningham said, letting vendors talk and connect with their customers. That's how we've grown in the past, connections, and how we can support local farm families around here to provide products to families in town is how we want to grow from there, Cunningham said. I have so much excitement for this to open. The most common thing I hear is, I love to support local products. I just don't know where to find them. Following the grand opening, the market's standard hours will be 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mondays, 3 to 6 p.m. Tuesdays, and on Wednesdays, the farm will deliver orders from its website. That brings us to an article entitled, Mason City Breaks Ground on Prairie Rock Bike Park. It's written by Robin McClelland of the Globe Gazette. Officials broke ground Tuesday morning on a new bike park they hope will make Mason City a destination for outdoor enthusiasts across the nation. Located on the city's north end near the entrance to Zerbel's Trail at 1409 Elm Drive, which butts up against the southern edge of Lime Creek Nature Center, Prairie Rock Bike Park is part of a nearly $12 million project to link the 450-acre conservation area to the new Highline Trail, the Riverwalk near Southbridge Mall, and 20 miles of recreation trails. The bike park, which also sits just north of the dog park on Elm Drive, was made possible by a $4.5 million State Destination Iowa grant received by the city and Cerro Gordo County. Officials, including Mayor Bill Schickel, City Administrator Aaron Burnett, and Elena Santizo of the Iowa Economic Development Authority, were on hand for Tuesday's ceremony. This will link us to Mason City's new Riverwalk, which you're going to be hearing a lot more about in the very near future, Schickel said. The Riverwalk is another placemaking effort on the part of Mason City. It will feature walking trails, play areas, and a gateway art installation that will be visible from southern entry to downtown just south of the Mason City Multipurpose Arena along the banks of the Willow Creek. The nearest bike park with comparable amenities is located in Bentonville, Arkansas, and draws thousands of visitors a year. Burnett praised the project and the residents who helped drive it. We started these conversations almost on a whim, Burnett said. We went on a Minnesota ski trip and the idea came up. Knowing some of these dedicated cyclists like Matt Curtis and the Baileys, Steve and Brooke, we saw the possibilities and worked toward finding the funding for it. The park is the continuation of a vision by the city and cycling enthusiasts from the area. Matt Curtis, owner of Wayne's Ski and Cycle, worked closely with other cyclists, city staff, and state officials to craft a concept that would entertain locals and attract visitors from around the country. I never expected to be here in just 4 short years, Curtis said. Early on, we were just hoping for the city to invest in the concept. We've been so blessed to have them behind us and to have found other partners who were interested, too. The park will feature a multi-level design and shelter house. The shelter itself will be somewhat elevated, allowing for visitors to look out upon cyclists as they session on the planned cycling features. Features are the dips, hills, climbs, and other obstacles on which to practice cycling skills. A session is how bicycling enthusiasts describe their practice. The design of the shelter house will echo Prairie School designs by Frank Lloyd Wright. The bike park is expected to be completed by the summer of 2025. There will be another public groundbreaking ceremony for Prairie Rock Trail's Riverhawk Trail at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 30th, at the parking lot of the Alternative High School, located at 19 North Illinois Avenue, and the MCHS Jazz Band to perform April 29th. Mason City High School Jazz Bands 1 and 2 will present Dimensions in Jazz 2024 at 7:30 p.m. Monday in the Performance Hall located in the FEMA Safe Room on the MCHS campus. This is the 48th annual Dimensions in Jazz concert presented by Mason City High School, according to a press release. Jazz Band 2 will open the concert with Monin, written by Bobby Timmons, and conclude with the Lou Donaldson tune Caracas. Student soloists are Olivia Ganson, Henry Hansen, Brock Anderson, Jackson Rattay, Peter Hardy, and Max and Case. Jazz Band 1 will perform the Frim Fram Sauce, Cold Duck Time, Step Lightly, and Tank. They will then be joined by guest saxophone soloist Mike Giles on the tunes Happy Walking by Flashlight, Autumn Leaves, and I'm Gonna Sit Right Down and Write Myself a Letter. Student soloists are Michael Johnson, Zion Ondoma, Karim Adada, Riley Penn, John Pyatt, Connor Prelip, Nolan Ott, Naomi Garrett, Ishnur Kaur, Maggie Garretts, and Nathan Markham. There will be a reception following the concert in the high school cafeteria where refreshments will be served. The concert is free of charge and the public is invited to attend. Jazz Band 1 is directed by Russell Kramer and Jazz Band 2 is directed by Aaron Anderson. Now it's time to read to today's obituaries. First, we remember Kevin John Lewerke, age 53, of Mason City, who passed away unexpectedly on Friday, April 19, 2024. A celebration of life visitation will be held 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 25th at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue North, Clear Lake, Iowa. A celebration of life memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, April the 26th at Zion Lutheran Church, 112 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, Iowa, with Reverend Derek Crawford officiating. Lunch will follow the service on Friday. Everyone is welcome. Inurnment will take place at a later date. Kevin John Lewerke was born April the 8th, 1971 in Mason City, the son of Curtis and Julie Lewerke. Kevin graduated the class of 1989 from Clear Lake High School and went on to receive his associate's degree at North Iowa Area Community College and his bachelor's degree in business administration at the University of Iowa. Kevin was united in marriage to Rebecca Becky Dietrich on August 21, 1999. To this union, they were blessed with four children, Lincoln, Grant, Ella, and Greta Lewerke. Kevin worked for Schuke Chevrolet in Mason City, Iowa, for several years. On January 2, 1997, Kevin joined the family business Wood Harbor, where he worked his way up to chief operating officer. He was a collector and especially enjoyed collecting coins, rocks, and shells. He also had a love for antiquing, weightlifting, scuba diving, bird watching, and fishing. Kevin loved spending time with his children and attended their school, sport, and cheer activities. He had a great sense of humor and even made TikTok videos with his girls. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel is handling arrangements, and they're located at 310 First Avenue North in Clear Lake, Iowa. You can reach them at area code 641-357-2193 or www.colonialchapels.com. Next, we remember Rose Marie Kelly, age 101, of Waverly, formerly of Mason City, who passed away peacefully April 21st at Bartles Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly. A mass of Christian burial will be held 10:30 a.m. Friday, April the 26th at Epiphany Parish, St. Joseph Catholic Church, 302 5th Street Southeast in Mason City. Visitation will take place 1 hour prior to the service at the church. She will be laid to rest at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Memorial contributions in Rose's honor may be directed to Epiphany Parish. Rose was born April 20, 1923 in Des Moines, youngest of nine children to Charles and Mary Rose Amodeo. She graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School with the class of 1941. On January 21, 1961, she married the love of her life, Vere Kelly, in Des Moines at the St. Anthony's Catholic Church. To this union, two daughters were born, Gina and Linda. Rose spent a number of years working for A.C. Nielsen. After retirement, she worked for Lundberg Clothing Store. Golf was a favorite pastime. She enjoyed traveling to different parts of the country, enjoying each trip for the experience it provided. Rose radiated a gentle kindness and warmth to all she met. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is handling arrangements. They can be reached at area code 641-423 2372 or at www.colonialchapels.com. Today's opinion page has an article entitled Clark's Paltry $76,000 Pay Shows Players Deserve More. It's written by Leonard Green, who writes for the New York Daily News. Before we launch a GoFundMe page for Caitlin Clark, who will make a comparatively paltry $76,535,000 as a WNBA rookie this season, consider that the basketball phenom is poised to sign an eight-figure endorsement deal with Nike that will include her own signature shoe. Caitlin Clark will be just fine. It's the other women's basketball players we should be worried about. Remember, the WNBA is the same league that features Phoenix Mercury star Brittany Griner, who in 2022 spent nearly 300 days in a Russian jail after being wrongly detained on a trumped-up drug smuggling charge. The only reason Griner was even in Russia was because she couldn't make enough money playing the game she loves in her own country, and she is one of the higher-paid players. How bad is the WNBA's starting salary? Yahoo Sports just posted a job on LinkedIn that pays almost as much, $73,000, to post about the NBA and WNBA on social media. Clark's contract has predictably sparked discussion and debate over pay equity and the ever-growing gender gap. Even President Joe Biden weighed in on the controversy, calling for women to be paid what they deserve. Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all, the president posted on his X account. But right now, we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. It's time that we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve. Clark will pocket $338,056 over 4 years under the contract with the NBA's Indiana Fever. In contrast, last year, number one NBA draft pick, 7'4" Victor Wembanyama, secured a $55 million four-year contract. In fact, the NBA's lowest-paid player, Muhammad Gaia of the Atlanta Hawks, makes a little more than $1.1 million, a sum that still dwarfs most WNBA salaries. Steph Curry makes more per game than what Caitlin Clark is making for 4 years, journalist Lisa Lang wrote on Instagram. With the toll sports and travel take on women's bodies, is this even a living wage? Of course, Clark should be making more. As a legend at the University of Iowa, Clark made history as the NCAA's Division I all-time leading scorer. More important, her play has increased interest and viewership of the game. Her first-round pick helped to drive a 304% increase in viewership for the WNBA draft this week, shattering previous ratings records with 2.46 million viewers on ESPN. But paying women basketball players what they deserve doesn't mean paying them what men make, and it's not sexist to say so. Neither is it sexist to say that most men and women prefer to watch the NBA. Comparing what WNBA players make to NBA salaries is like comparing apples and tractor trailer parts. The name of the game is revenue, and the men's game generates much more of it. The WNBA has a TV contract worth $60 million. The NBA's contract is worth $2.7 billion. How much bigger is that? It's like standing Wembanyama next to Dawn Staley. Staley just won her third national title as coach of the University of South Carolina, beating Clark and the University of Iowa in a game that drew 18.9 million viewers, the most watched women's basketball game of all time. Caitlin Clark is the sole reason why viewership has shot through the roof for our game. The sole reason, Staley said. That's high praise from a woman who is already in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Clark's presence in the game has been a slam dunk, which appears to be the only thing she can't do. And again, this was written by Leonard Green, who writes for the New York Daily News. Now we'll take a quick look at sports. Top story is entitled, Honoring a Legend. Dave Long returns to Mason City for inaugural relays. It's written by Nate Thomas of the Globe Gazette. Dave Long was initially lukewarm on the idea of coming back to Mason City for Monday's Riverhawk relays when Phil Johnson inquired earlier this year. Long, who spent 14 years as the Mohawk track and cross-country coach, currently resides in Laguna Beach, California, and runs an educational consulting firm with his daughter. A trip back to North Iowa was a tough ask. Then Johnson sweetened the pot. Johnson, with approval from the school board, helped rename the Riverhawk Relays after Long. Johnson asked, "What if we renamed it the Dave Long Relays?" Long said, recalling the phone conversation between the two. "I said, I will cancel everything I have." At the start of the track meet on Monday evening at Riverhawk Stadium, the name became official as Long was introduced in front of a crowd, one that included dozens of Long's former Mason City runners, and fired the ceremonial first gunshot. The pavement on the track inside of Riverhawk Stadium is new. But the track Long stood on during his introduction on Monday night was the same one that he drew up and his runners ran on in 1981 when he was coaching and teaching for the school. "It's such an honor," Long said. "Even standing here is emotional, really." This was the first trip back to Mason City in almost 2 years for Long. His last visit was when he was inducted into the MCHS Athletics Hall of Fame in 2022. Long still works with his firm, Dave Long & Associates, consulting with 60-plus superintendents on improving their school districts. He also helps run 5 educational conferences. With many of his former athletes in town to help celebrate Monday's occasion and to reminisce on memories from Long's time as a coach from 1969 to 1982, Long enjoyed his return to North Iowa. "It's wonderful to be back because it brings back such wonderful memories," Long said. "I was here for 21 years. It's a nice flashback. Just about 30 former runners came back from across the country. It's just very special." The accomplishments are a lot to name for Long in his time at Mason City. He was inducted into the school's Athletic Hall of Fame. He is one of the founding members of Iowa Track and Cross Country Coaches Association and was inducted into its Hall of Fame, too. Long won 4 cross-country team state championships along with 5 individuals who won the state meet, including Kevin Johnson and Scott Crowell. Long also oversaw 30 individuals and relay teams win state championships in track and field. In other track and field news, Mason City's Meyer enjoying this year's success. It's also written by Nate Thomas of the Mason City Globe Gazette. Cade Meyer carries a little swag with him. It's evident by his track shoes. On his left foot is a pair of Nikes, white with other neon colors, the same shoes as last year. The right foot is the opposite, black with the same neon, new shoes for a new year. "Just some thrower's swag," he said, looking cool just for the fun. Meyer is a fun watch, too, and is enjoying the fun that is coming with the success that he is having this season. As a sophomore, the Mason City thrower made the Class 4A state track meet in shot put and finished 15th. This year, he came into the year with expectations. Meyer is living up to them. On April the 8th, he broke a 15-year-old school record in the shot put with a throw of 54 feet 8 inches at the Dodger Relays in Fort Dodge. With that throw, he earned a bid into this week's Drake Relays. On Monday, Meyer threw 53-7 on a windy afternoon at the Dave Long Relays on his home turf. After not throwing 50 feet in either of his first seasons as a Riverhawk, that has been a consistent mark for him so far this spring, but he is just enjoying the ride. "It has just been a fun, great year with my teammates," Meyer said. "Track is one of the sports you don't just do it. It's about family. You have fun with your friends and you just enjoy it. You have time to have fun." If you told Meyer he would do all that before the season, he might not have believed you. After football season, he did not do much preparation for the track season during the winter. Come spring, he's still having success. "I was definitely not prepared," Meyer said. "I did not practice much." The start of the season was a little difficult for Meyer, although he still put together a few solid throws during the indoor season. He threw a personal best huck of 52-1 up during the IATC Indoor Championships in Ames in March, and then started to get more momentum going into the last few weeks. "I got it down. You get the hang of it and just go with the flow," Meyer said. "I'll take the school records. One of my accomplishments was Drake, and the next is state. That is the goal, to medal at state." Drake Relays has a loaded shot put field led by Lidmar's Sam Watts. While Meyer doesn't expect much this weekend, he is still looking forward to the rest of the season. "Just to PR and get better," Meyer said. "Train hard, lots of throws. I mean lots. It takes a lot." And I want to remind you that you are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now it's time to turn to the Fort Dodge Messenger, and our top story is entitled Double Check, Double Check, Double Check. State officials offer tips to fight scams, and it's written by Bill Shea. All too often, Iowans find themselves talking on the telephone to a stranger who at first seems friendly, even charming. But as the conversation goes on, that friendly stranger becomes demanding, asking for money or gift cards to be sent to them quickly. That situation has the classic hallmarks of a scam. Two state officials on the front lines of combating scams offered this advice Wednesday to anyone receiving phone calls or emails that just don't seem right. Double check, double check, double check. The Iowa Insurance Commissioner Doug Ohman and Al Perales, an investigator in the office of Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, said independently checking out anything that sounds too good to be true can save a person from being scammed out of lots of money. More often than not, these scams are devastating, Perales said. Ohman and Perales spoke to about 40 people during a Stop the Scammers presentation at Citizens Central, 617 Central Avenue. They talked about the various scams that law enforcement has identified and offered advice on how people can protect themselves from the crooks carrying out the scams. Throughout their noontime presentation, they repeated their advice to double check, double check, double check. Ohman said scams are becoming more sophisticated and more prevalent. The digital age is introducing more risk to Iowans, he said. And while scams used to fit into easily described categories, many now combine elements of several types of ripoffs. Perales described this situation as a buffet line of scams. There are people who wake up every day to lie, cheat, and steal, and they're focused on you, Perales said. Protecting yourself from scammers can be as simple as not answering phone calls from numbers you don't recognize, according to Ohman. He also recommended doing business locally instead of with strangers online. Deal with people you know that you can speak to, he said. The state insurance division's responsibilities include registering organizations that offer investments and providing investor education. As a result, the agency deals with investment scams. If you don't understand an investment, my best advice to you is avoid it, he said. Perales cautioned the attendees about Bitcoin machines, which look like ATMs. If anyone asks you to get money and put it in a Bitcoin machine, it's a scam, he said. Our next article is entitled Body Found in Sac County Field. Speculation centers on man missing since November. Also written by Bill Shea, and the dateline is Sac City. A body was found in a Sac County field Wednesday afternoon, touching off speculation that a man missing since last November had been found. The Iowa Department of Public Safety has not confirmed that the remains are those of David Schultz, age 53, of Lakeview. However, in a statement released Wednesday evening, the department confirmed that the body was found near where his semi-trailer was found on November 21, 2023. Schultz was reported missing on that date after he did not deliver a truckload of pigs to a buying station near Sac City as planned. He left Lakeview on the night of November 20, 2023 to pick up the pigs at a location near Eagle Grove. He left that site at 10:50 p.m. November 20th. Security camera images showed Schultz was at the marker 126 Travel Center on U.S. Highway 20 east of Fort Dodge at 11:15 p.m. November the 20th. At about 3 p.m. November 21st, his truck was found near Union Avenue and 190th Street. Data from his phone indicated that the truck had been there since 12:40 a.m. that day. A massive search for Schultz was launched, but it was unsuccessful. At 2 p.m. Wednesday, the Sac County Sheriff's Office received a call from a man reporting that he had found a body in his field. That field is along Union Avenue between 190th and 200th Street. The body was taken to the state medical examiner's office in Ankeny for an autopsy. And the final story from the front page of the Messenger this morning is entitled Foster Parents Are Needed. It's written by John McBride. Four Oaks Foster and Adoptive Family Connections is actively recruiting families to become foster parents, especially in northwest Iowa. According to Christina Heffel, the recruitment and training manager for Four Oaks, the entire state is seeing a need for foster families. However, the big area of need is in this area for sibling groups. We do need families for children of all ages, said Heffel. We are definitely short on foster homes everywhere in the state. There's definitely a big need in Northwest Iowa. One other large area of need is for teens, she added. That's children over the age of 10. Heffel said Four Oaks has lost a lot of foster families for various reasons, including retirement, families adopting their foster children, and others just ready to move into another stage of life. When a foster parent retires or moves on, we need parents to replace them, said Heffel. Right now, those replacements are not coming as fast as those leaving. We definitely need to fill those spots. The process to become a foster parent has several steps to complete. Complete an online inquiry. Complete an orientation session, available at 8 p.m. on Wednesday and Sunday evenings or every other Tuesday at noon. It's a virtual training session for an hour with Four Oaks recruiter learning about the rules, definitions, and benefits of fostering. Sign up for class. NTDC classes are offered often throughout the state. There are three-hour classes offered weekly for 11 weeks. During the class, attendees will complete a licensing process of a home study. A licensing worker will come to the family's home and meet with a family and review the process. Once applicants have completed the class and home study, a Four Oaks licensing worker submits all documents to the State Department of Health and Human Services to review. That agency reviews and issues a foster care license or adoption approval, depending on the situation. The Young Shelter in Fort Dodge has 5 children waiting for foster placement right now, and there are currently no homes available for them. One former foster parent who asked not to be identified had more than 25 children live with them since becoming licensed in 2015. The parent said there are a lot of challenges to being a foster parent, but the positives outweigh them. Some advice I would give would be to ensure you have a support system to lean on when things are difficult, said this former foster parent. Join the support groups in your area. Use unconditional positive regard when referring to biological parents who have their children removed. The former foster parent said it's almost critical to have clear expectations, routines, and family rules and allow plenty of time to practice those during the early days of placement. You need to give second chances when there is a mistake made and start each morning with a clean slate, said the former foster parent. Also, teaching kids how to do different things that might be developmentally younger than their age is something that we learned. Many of the children in our home simply did not know how to do different things, like put a dish in a dishwasher or even clear their plates off the dinner table. These were not expectations in the past. The former foster parent said they received a phone call almost immediately after completing classes for placement of a 9-month-old, highlighting the need for placement homes even in 2015. That child stayed with me for 18 days while the state was doing safety assessments for other family members to place the young child with and then was moved to a family member that was approved safe, said the former parent. After that, the phone really never stopped ringing. The former foster parent said there are some big challenges when taking on the role of a foster family. Those include not knowing the longevity of how long a child would be living with them, not fully understanding all the why things were being handled the way they were, but also knowing that it was not their business as there is still confidentiality involved in these cases, and finally working hard to maintain a relationship with biological parents. I think the final one is a challenge for many, but it is also one of the most important things a foster parent can do. Most of the time, children unconditionally love their parents and want to be home with their families. They believe that mistakes can be made and their parents will make better choices, the former foster parent said. That is part of their innocence, which is why remaining a support for the biological parent and keeping your own beliefs and comments to yourself is extremely important when providing foster care as a child to a child. The journey is usually not easy for neither the child in care nor the family providing the care, but we have created some bonus families with kids who have lived with us, and for us, it was 100% worth it. Anyone that would be interested in becoming a foster home should start by going to the Four Oaks website at https://iowafosterandadoption.org. There's a multitude of information on that site and links to start the process of becoming a foster home. KYL changes weekend events. Dateline Webster City. Due to the projected forecast, the Kendall Young Library Family Summer Kickoff Carnival to kick off the summer library program will be held inside from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the library in Webster City. The scheduled Friends of the Library pop-up book sale is canceled for this month and will be rescheduled for the future. Watch the library's Facebook page or press releases for details. And feds to require bird flu tests of dairy cattle before transport. This is written by Jared Strong of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Starting next week, certain dairy cattle must be tested for avian influenza before they can be transported to a different state, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Wednesday. The requirement is among several that will expand the testing, reporting, and monitoring of the cattle to reduce the spread of bird flu among the animals. The new rules follow evidence that highly pathogenic avian influenza, which is commonly spread by migrating birds, has transmitted from cow to cow and from cattle to poultry, and that infected cows might not show symptoms of illness, the USDA said. Last week, an analysis of the virus from a Kansas City cow showed that it had acquired an adaptation to mammals. On Tuesday, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said tests had revealed fragments of the virus in pasteurized milk, but that they don't pose a risk to public health. While we are taking this action today, it is important to remember that thus far we have not found changes to the virus that would make it more transmissible to humans and between people, the USDA said Wednesday. It has been a month since the virus was first confirmed to have infected dairy cattle in Texas. The virus has now been detected in 33 dairy herds in 8 states, the USDA said. Part of that spread has been attributed to the transportation of infected cows to new herds. The cows most often recover from infection after a week or so, but their tainted milk cannot be used for commercial human consumption. The virus is often deadly for poultry and can rapidly infect flocks. The rules set to take effect on Monday require lactating dairy cattle to test negative for influenza A before they are transported across state lines, and that requirement might be expanded to other types of dairy cattle in the future. Labs must also report their confirmed infections of livestock to the USDA, and certain herd owners must provide details about where their cattle have been transported. Further information about the new rules is forthcoming, and state agriculture officials declined for now to say what impact they will have on Iowa dairy farmers. We are still awaiting specific guidance from USDA regarding this new interstate movement order, said Don McDowell, a spokesperson for the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. John Maxwell, a dairy farmer near Davenport, predicted that the effects for most dairies in Iowa will be inconsequential and that it's best to be cautious and increase testing until more is known about the disease. We have to do tests anyway, he said, in reference to dairy cattle he sells out of state. So it would be one more test, and whatever the cost might be, if one more is not the end of the world. The USDA has said it will reimburse farmers for testing of sick and asymptomatic cattle. States with confirmed bird flu infections of dairy cattle include Kansas, Idaho, Michigan, New Mexico, North Carolina, Ohio, South Dakota, and Texas. A virus similar to what has infected cows has been found in poultry flocks in Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, New Mexico, and Texas, the USDA said. Now it's time to turn to the obituaries. First, we remember Wyetta DeVilbiss, age 92, of Fort Dodge, who died April 24, 2024, at the Van Diest Medical Center with family at her side. Memorial visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, April 26th at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Memorial services will be held 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Dayton United Methodist Church with interment to follow at West Lawn Cemetery, Lehigh. Next, we remember Marilyn Lindemann of Humboldt. Funeral will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, April the 27th, Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Visitation 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, April the 26th, at Mason Linhart Funeral Home. You can get more information from the funeral home at www.masonlindhart.com. Next, we remember Ashley Marlowe of Burt. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April the 29th, at the Burt Presbyterian Church. Visitation is 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, April the 28th at the church. www.lentzfuneralhome.com for more information. Now we remember Johnny John Eggers, age 68, of Fort Dodge, who died April the 22nd, 2024 at his home. Cremation services have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. John Merle Eggers was born May 2, 1955 in Fort Dodge, the son of Merle and Pauline Eggers. He graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School. He was employed with the Messenger Mitchell Dental Lab and did deliveries for medical supplies. He enjoyed fishing, watching racing with his dad, and going to car shows. A celebration of life will be held Friday, May the 10th, 2024, from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Olison Park Donna Jean Monkline Pavilion. And finally, we remember John Lowell Cook, age 84, of Fort Dodge, who died on Friday, April the 19th, in Burlington. A celebration of life will be held on May 18th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Manning Hall, next to St. Alphonsus Church in Mount Pleasant. John was born October 24, 1939 in Fort Dodge to Archie and Myrtle Cook. He graduated from St. Edmund Catholic School and went on to attend Wayne State College. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in John's honor may be directed to the cross-country teams at St. Edmund Catholic School, 2220 4th Avenue North, Fort Dodge, Iowa, 50501. Condolences may be left directly to the family by visiting www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. Now we turn over to sports and the top story, area athletes head to Drake. Gale Myers, Dodgers 4x1, Messenger Land standouts will be on the Blue Oval. It's written by Dana Becker of the Messenger. For Maria Myers, competing against elite talent has become the norm. The University of Iowa softball commit has toured the United States for the past several years, competing in some of the biggest tournaments on the diamond. This week, though, Myers will get her chance to do the same in a different sport. A St. Edmunds junior, Myers qualified for the Drake Relays in the discus. She will compete Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. from Drake Stadium. Joining Myers will be the Fort Dodge Boys 4x100-meter relay team. Potential runners include senior Omarion Myers Zimmerman, juniors Jamarius Gibbs Green or Drake Warland, sophomores Noah Daniel or Tytrell Mosley, or freshman Kyrie Rokon. They hit the Blue Oval on Saturday morning. Area qualifiers include Ashlyn Works from Humboldt, Maddie Fair of West Bend Mallard, Rachel Shaney from Emmitsburg, and Algona's Max Nevitt, Madison Errig, and Bulldog Boys 4x100 Relay. With a throw of 123.7 at a meet in Clarion earlier this year, Myers earned her spot in the field. She ranks 27th overall and 6th in Class 1A. "It means a lot to me that I get to compete at such a competitive event," Myers said. "Qualifying for Drake has been one of my goals from the beginning of the year. I can't wait to watch and compete against the best throwers in the state from all classes." Reese Goodlett of Pleasant Valley leads the way with a throw of 145.9, while Charlie Morton from Hampton Dumont Cal is second and the defending relays champion in both throwing events. Goodlett was the runner-up to Morton a year ago. Myers has competed against Morton this season. The Dodger relay went 44.74 to qualify at Drake Stadium during the Jim Duncan Invitational a few weeks back. Rokon, a freshman, was part of the Fort Dodge Middle School 4x100 that placed 15th here last season. Works, a senior, will join Myers in the discus event. She qualified with a throw of 139 earlier this month, which has her 13th in the state. Fair, a sophomore, set the school record in the 100 and will run here on Friday afternoon. Her time of 12.41 is tied for 6th in all classes. Shaney, also a sophomore, qualified in the high jump and long jump. She is currently 21st in long jump and tied for 7th in the event here last season. Erig will be in the high jump Thursday, while Shaney will Nevitt will compete Friday morning at 9 in the shot put. Erig and Shaney are both tied for 14th, clearing 5'4", with Nevitt tied for 23rd. Algona's girls 4x100 of Lily Alley, Caitlin Burns, Summer Thompson, and Natalie Johnson will run on Saturday at 9:40 a.m. with the boys' quartet of William Weikert, Jack Limbaugh, Levi Walker, and Evan Alley in action at 10:12 a.m. Several former prep standouts are slated for action during the event. Aaron Lurson, a St. Edmund grad, is listed on the Wartburg 4x800 relay. Humboldt prep Quentin Orr is on the Iowa State Sprint Medley. Kirsten Fisher of Southeast Valley will compete in the heptathlon for Iowa State alongside Cyclone teammate Sydney Willits. Willits, the granddaughter of Fort Dodge's Fran and Barb Long, and daughter of FDSH graduate Christine Long Willits, will also be in action in the long jump. Spencer Moon, a former South Central Calhoun standout, now at Simpson, is entered in the 1500. From Iowa Central, Jed Elm Barkey in the steeplechase, Stephen Sidnor in the long jump, Joaquim Walters in the long jump, and Davion Briggs in the 400 hurdles have all qualified. The Tritons are also entered in the men's 4x100, 4x400, 4x800 sprint medley and distance medley relays, along with the women's 4x400. In college baseball, Iowa Central clips Northeast in baseball. The 7th-ranked Iowa Central baseball team used a late rally to get past Northeast here Wednesday at Rogers Park 7-6. After the Hawks took a 6-2 lead in the 7th, the Tritons scored 3 in the 8th and 2 in the 9th to secure the win. Troy Berg, Michael Seamer, and Zachary Goodwin each had 2 hits, with Goodwin and Jack Mossour both driving in a pair of runs for Iowa Central. Berg scored twice on the day. Jack Busson picked up the win. Hunter Frost recorded 6 strikeouts in 5 innings of work, and C.J. Burdack had 3 in relief. The Tritons head to Burlington for a 3-game series with Southeastern beginning Saturday. And Triton softball team earns road sweep. The Iowa Central softball team claimed a road sweep over Ellsworth here Wednesday. Scores were 11-6 and 10-1 in 6 innings. In the opener, former Humboldt standout Alexis Hansen was 4-for-4 with 3 RBIs, including a homer and a triple, as Jada Long drove in 4. Kennedy Palmer had 3 hits, while Alina Sandy, Bree Nolte, and Sydney Wilson each had 2. Sandy and Nolte both plated a pair of runs. Morgan Weeks collected 3 hits and reached base 4 times in the nightcap, as Carly Ryan and Gabriella Tabor both had 2 hits and 2 RBIs. Emma Hoyle and Long picked up wins inside the circle as Long struck out 6. Iowa Central heads to Boone on Saturday to face Des Moines area and Mason City on Sunday to meet North Iowa area to conclude the regular season. That brings us to an article entitled Wilkie in Vegas for Prestigious Honor. Fort Dodge Bowling Stalwart is 2024 Helen Baker Award winner. This is written by Eric Pratt. Sharla Wilkie is rarely surprised and hardly ever at a loss for words. Learning that she would be the 2024 recipient of the Helen Baker Award left her both. The longtime Fort Dodge resident and staunch bowling advocate is being honored on Thursday morning at the South Point Hotel Casino during the annual United States Bowling Congress Convention. Wilkie is the first Baker recipient ever from Iowa. The Helen Baker Award recognizes one person each year nationally for their outstanding association service on a local and regional level. I was just kind of in shock when I found out, Wilkie admitted. I was notified on a Zoom call in January, and at first, I really couldn't breathe or talk. It caught me off guard. I had no idea. I'm incredibly proud and thankful. I know Fort Dodge's Chris Burnham and 2 previous state board members, Connie Rommel and Sally Reigard, were involved in the nomination process. I'm so appreciative of that and them. I've never done any of this for individual accolades. It's always been for the growth and development of the sport. I'm never comfortable being in the spotlight, but this is absolutely the cherry on top of my career. Wilkie has been a bowler for as long as she can remember. The 1974 Fort Dodge Senior High graduate fondly recalls early days of being introduced to the game by her mother. It started when I was 3 years old with plastic pins and balls on the kitchen floor and Mom teaching me the proper form, Wilkie said. When I was 8, I really started taking it seriously and joined the junior leagues in Fort Dodge. It began a lifelong love affair with the sport. Wilkie has been a member of the Fort Dodge area USBC and the Iowa State USBC for 56 years. She has served as both the director and president of the Fort Dodge Women's Bowling Association and was named director of the Iowa State USBC in 2018. Wilkie has also been the association manager and is currently finance chair on the state board. I've really tried to be about service above everything else, first locally and then at the state level, said Wilkie, a member of both the Fort Dodge area USBC and Iowa State USBC Hall of Fame, when we made the change from the WIBC to the USBC in 2006, I chose to make a really big change in my professional life after 26 years in the trucking industry and was hired as association manager. I learned a lot and tried my best to continue to promote participation on the local and state levels. Bowling is a lifelong sport. It's something you can do as a kid until you're well into your 90s, and there are so many options from competitive on down to social. I don't know what my life would be like without bowling, and I don't want to know. I still love the game so much. Wilkie was also given a Lifetime Achievement Award last September at the Fort Dodge Area USBC Banquet. The USBC Awards presentation is scheduled for Thursday at 9 a.m. Over 800 people are expected to attend. Helen Baker was the fifth president of the Women's International Bowling Congress. This award, which was established in 2006 when the USBC was chartered, recognizes an outstanding bowling leader who has made invaluable contributions to local and state associations as an innovator, creator, and mentor of adult programs. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.